Welcome to The Changeover, the podcast that gives sales and marketing teams at industrial organizations the fuel to grow and prosper in today's dynamic landscape. We're Wider Group, an integrated marketing and sales growth agency and one of the first 20 HubSpot partners in the world. We're glad you tuned in. Let's roll.
Welcome back to The Changeover podcast. I'm Chelsea Drouche, strategist and SEO manager here at Wider Group, and I am with one of my favorite people today.
I'm Joe Phillip, and I'm Director of Creative Strategy, also at Wider Group.
Today, we are going to dig into one of the most frequently asked questions from our clients lately, which is, how should we be doing content strategy in 2025, in the age of AI? We're going to talk about things like, should we even still be blogging? How do we make content that stands out from the things that AI can generate? Should we be using AI to generate any content? And if we do that, then how do we make it better than what AI is already putting out?
And it's not just about competing against AI, just to be clear. It's also about evolving your whole approach to content. Everything from research and ideation to distribution, amplification, and even starting to incorporate more direct one-to-one engagement between your content and the people who really care about it. And it's also about making friends with AI in the long run.
Funny enough, I feel like AI is just the catalyst for shifts in marketing that we maybe should have made a long time ago or should have been doing the whole time. And it's just now being forced upon us by all of the things we've come to depend on and no longer working the way they used to. So it's now about how can we take our business goals, and in the landscape that has changed so much in the last couple of years, how can we make sure that the way we're creating content, the types of content we're choosing to create, and who we're reaching with that content is actually helping us meet those business goals and not just following some arbitrary set of best practices. I think what we're finding today, and tell me if you agree with this, Joe, is that it's so much more now quality over quantity. And this isn't like new advice.
I think so too. I think that it was almost like people saw results, you know, from blogging and advanced content together and started to lean on it like it was a really simplistic formula. I'm going to blog, and then I'm going to regularly put together something that's a little more valuable. And people fall into patterns, and I think a lot of that happened. But now it's time to start rethinking the whole thing and get a little more strategic.
Definitely agree with that. I think the other thing that led to this formulaic pattern was our over-reliance on keyword opportunities dictating the topic choices. And so you'd get in this habit of, I perform keyword research on whatever cadence that my editorial planning calls for. That dictates what we write about. We write about it at this cadence because that's what our blog subscription publication preferences dictate. And so you became almost on autopilot in a way where you could plan out like 12 months in advance what you're going to create, because the decision criteria you're using to determine what you create and when you create it wasn't changing at all to any real life behaviors going on with the audience you're trying to reach.
From my perspective, right, in the writing end of things, it was really easy to get handed some keywords and write to those keywords and then use tools to optimize to those keywords rather than really thinking about the context of the content, right? And thinking about the needs of the users that really drive the whole purpose of the content in the first place. So I certainly agree with that. We relied a lot on you know, keyword optimization because in part, I think we also valued website traffic maybe more than we should have. Another problem that we need to really think about when we think about blogging and we think about advanced content, you know, that all lives on your website. And that's assuming that everybody's coming to your website. And that you are creating content that is going to justify a visit. What we're really realizing now, and I think we've seen a lot of this happening, we've seen a lot of reports of people watching their website traffic dwindle, and that's maybe not necessarily because of something they specifically did but it's because of changes that we're seeing. The reason that you're seeing less traffic to your website is because there seems to be less traffic going to websites. And if that's the case, that's a problem. And part of the problem that exists in website content is that it also limits engagement opportunities with the content. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important part of it, is creating content and then building two-way conversations with it rather than just hosting it and hoping somebody's going to come and visit.
There's a lot of reasons why we have traditionally done content the way we've done it. And I think it's really important, your point about the way we are measuring success and then therefore influencing the decisions about what we do more of, what we stop, what we do less of, what we start. And we were so fixated, and rightly so at the time, on website traffic type metrics and conversion type metrics and views on from a volume perspective of owned content on our own platforms, right, on our own website, because we knew that was indicative of down funnel conversion metrics, and we could expect a certain amount of leads, MQLs, SQLs, et cetera, based on that top level number. And we're finding that not to be the same anymore. And so I think we've touched somewhat on some of the tech-based implications for why things are changing, but interested on your take as well on the human behavior side of things that is, I think, contributing as well, but also the root of why the tech changed too.
Exactly, because the tech is developed, right, to deliver to the humans. And that's what we need to keep in mind, is there's always the person behind the search engine. And search engines have changed algorithms because they're always trying to improve what they serve. And I guess the same you could say for the AI tools that are now serving up answers. They're being designed to please the people who use them, and we need to keep that in mind. So what we've seen, you know, we're talking a little bit about the tech changes, but we also know that there are changes in trust. There are changes now in the users themselves. We know we've got new generations of people who are coming into the world who interact differently with technology, who interact differently with the internet than, say, the boomers and Gen Xers like me, right? They're looking for experts, but they're also checking their peers. They're checking their peers a lot, and that's why we're finding them on social media. They're looking for stuff that really matters on social media. And I think for some of us less digital native users of these platforms, that feels counterintuitive, but it's really changing quickly.
So we've talked quite a bit about like what used to work and why we did it and, you know, what that landscape looked like. But let's talk about now. So what do you see needs to change? Like, I think this all makes sense to our audience, right? But how do they know where to go now? What's important today, and what do we need to think about?
Right. So I think it makes most sense to start by thinking about what you're competing against. So if you think about what a SERP looks like today, and where results are even served up on the page, and how much junk a user has to wade through to get to results of their search, it's a mess in there. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to compete with. And the saturation of copycat content is also just overwhelming, I think, results pages. We did talk a little bit about trust shifting and how people are looking now to social media for information and not just connection, but they seem to want both at the same time, which is really interesting. But we also really need to think a little bit more about how we're delivering content. When it came to advanced content, a lot of the time, there was a lot of reliance on printables, right? PDFs, tip sheets, ebooks, white papers, that kind of thing. And what we're seeing is an appetite for a lot more diversity in content. We know that people like to consume video. We know that they like things that are really short. We know that highly visual stuff really gets people's attention, and it sticks a little bit more. So it's just as important now to be thinking about formats strategically as much as we're thinking about the topic and the information.
Yeah, and I think there's multiple things dictating this switch in formats that are predominant. And, you know, you touched on some of the audience preference part of that. Like, simply if I think about the person who's going to be consuming this content,
yeah,
what do I know about how they prefer to consume content? You know, that's one part of it. I think the other big part of it is where you're going to be promoting that content and thinking about the actual format of the platform. Because one of the biggest things that's changing is having to, basically, if you took your pie chart of traffic sources for your top to middle bottom of the funnel content creation, there's a lot of people who have thus far had 80%+ of that traffic source coming in organically through Google. That's going to need to be diversified. We need to take the eggs out of the Google basket and toss them in a bunch of different directions. And those different directions are going to also better suit varying formats. So we're not only satisfying the change in end user behavior and desires, but we're going to be able to satisfy then publishing natively on YouTube, publishing, you know, I've seen a lot lately about LinkedIn Shorts. I know you've heard a lot about YouTube Shorts, but LinkedIn is coming in as a copycat for B2B. That LinkedIn short form video is starting to be promoted well by their algorithm and consumed well by their end users. And if you think about things like micro content, and this can fall in that category, short videos, you could even consider things like interacting in an ongoing discussion, whether that's on LinkedIn, on Reddit, on Quora, whatever, as micro content. Like, it's not a pre-planned, oh, I've got this content calendar and in March I'm making this thing. Like, you can't predict that. So a lot of the shift is not only in what we choose to write about, no longer being dictated by keyword success, potential, but the format we're writing it in being dictated more by audience preference and platform that you're going to publish on.
And I would say conversation and feedback, right? So if you are present on social media and if you are interacting with your audiences there, you're listening, you're hearing them, they're telling you things. And that means that your content has to react to the things that you're learning in those contexts.
And ding, ding, ding.
Right.
That's a big thing.
Right. And it also means your content needs to be, well, like you said, created. You're talking, you know, not just formats, but you're talking also tones and styles. You know, I mean, you have to protect your brand, but if you're say, you know, doing something on LinkedIn, it's going to look very different from what you might be doing on Instagram, because your audiences there are likely not 100% the same. Mm-hmm. So that,
and
I think
those algorithms prefer on those platforms isn't the same. So while we don't want to fall into the same trap we fell into over the years with Google, where we're making decisions based on the platform driving what works and what doesn't.
Right, like Simon says.
Yeah, like we need to focus first and foremost as you're going into 2025 and you're thinking about content strategy. The biggest shift first and foremost is that you are focused primarily and as solely as possible on the audience and understanding what do they care about right now and how do I know that? How do I know what they care about right now and what I should be talking about? So the whole listening thing that you alluded to earlier, that becomes part of your content strategy. So I think that's a paradigm shift for marketers as well, is I think if I were to ask you to define content strategy, you're going to talk about the ideation and creation and execution of the content. But it's almost bigger than that. Like, where does social listening and audience research fit into that as part of your actual content strategy maneuver? You can't
it becomes a real feedback loop as opposed to a sort of linear back and forth, right? It really needs to be a feedback loop. And I think another thing that we need to really remember is the extra E, right? That's been added to EAT, and the importance of expertise and the importance of subject matter experts and those people that you have inside your organization who are so trustworthy and trusted and experienced and really, really know the needs of your customers through experience, through their interactions with them. That that regard, that respect that those experts have, that's that rubs right off on your brand. That's so important. And in the context of social media or industry forum engagement and participation, mm-hmm. nobody wants to see the posts from your logo. They yes. want to see the posts from your people, mm-hmm. right?
I was just talking about this with a client earlier. So shout out to you, Angie. We were just talking about how, you know, the motto today needs to be that marketing is a team sport. Marketing is not done by the marketing department. Marketing is done by the company. And that is really alluding to your point just now. You know, we need participation from the on the ground experts, from the engineers,
yes.
from the people who are customer facing on the service team. Like, you guys are the ones who are actually conversing with, hearing from in real time what matters most right now to the audience we're trying to reach. That's how we stay relevant. That's how we stay nimble. That's how we are able to balance what I think is going to be this challenge for us going forward, where we are accustomed to and it's comfortable and it's easier to plan super far ahead on what we want to create and what that looks like and budget for it. And what we're challenging everyone with going into 2025 is to let go of those safety nets, that we have to be more agile, we have to be more nimble, and we need those boots on the ground of our frontline individuals in your organization to help us be able to do that by being our ears and being that feedback loop and saying, this is what people are talking about right now. This is what they care about right now. And here's my stance on it that you can use to get put us out there in this conversation and have an opinion and have a voice and then generate conversation with those people.
Right. And it doesn't mean that you're turning your engineering department into a bunch of content writers, right? But their bylines matter and their information matters. And so tapping their brains and regularly checking in with them is going to feed your content so much more perspective. It's going to help you achieve that thought leadership positioning that is really going to differentiate in those spaces, in those top of funnel spaces. It's going to help you build your brand there. And that's what's going to help you then when eventually those folks do need to go looking for a solution and they do come to your site.
Let's summarize this for one quick second. So we talked a lot about, you know, what worked well in the past. We started talking about what's going to work well next year. So I think one of the big key shifts is going from a little bit more of a quantity focus to a little bit more of a quality focus as far as how much you're creating and how much you're putting into every individual piece you create. So to be real tangible for one second, we're seeing with our clients shifts from things like I blog once a week and I create advanced content once a quarter to I'm creating one to be determined content package once every other month. And I'm creating one core content piece that is very thorough, very well, whether it's researched or it's got lots of first person perspective. And then from that core piece, we're creating peripheral pieces around it that are repurposed short form micro content that not only gives more life to the big piece you just invested in, but helps promote that big piece and drive people back to it as well. So I think one of the big then versus now shifts is quantity changing to quality. And I think that's tangibly what we're seeing change in clients' programs.
I think too that that really close coordination of what's actually in the content is new too. We start with an important concept, but where do we get that concept, right? Mm-hmm. And we've talked a little bit about this, and people have sources of information that they're not tapping, right? They have CRM data, they have support tickets, they have sales transcripts, they could interview customers, they could interview almost customers who they lost a deal on, right? Like, there are lots and lots of places where you can get information and feedback to really start digging into what's most important to those audiences and what really rises to the top in terms of what their priorities are. But those aren't the only places we can get information. We have tools too.
If we were to set out to create an ed cal for a client in 2023, the main motion to come up with ideas, there may be some things that we've got on an ongoing list that we just talked about and came up, or we think are good ideas or the client thinks are good ideas. It might be kind of random, but the majority of the actual, I'm going to sit down and figure out what to write about motion was keyword research. Now we're talking about minimizing that slash all the way to ditching it entirely in certain scenarios, depending on the client and their SEO landscape and, you know, how much value they might be able to pull out of that. How do we pull ideas out of sales transcripts? How do we pull ideas out of the engineers who are having conversations in R&D? So how do we run a content ideation workshop on a cadence with those engineers to just pull the ideas out of what they're hearing and learning? They're also part of that community of end users in a lot of scenarios of what the hot topics are in innovation. What are people wanting to learn about? Get those ideas from there. How do we do structured, ongoing social listening in the types of spaces, in the forums, in Reddit, in Quora, in LinkedIn groups, where we know there's already ongoing conversations occurring with the target audience we're trying to reach? How do we make all those things operational so that all those sources are getting compiled into our ideation pool? And that's where we decide, here's what we're going to write about. And then that also lends itself into how we're going to write it.
How it gets made.
I think is the other big then versus now.
Yes, I would agree. And the scenarios that you're explaining, like this is where you start to make friends with AI, right? You know, we're talking about pretty vast troves of data, potentially.
If you're talking
unstructured, right? And so, right. And so, you want a tool that's going to be able to help you find patterns, right? And you probably couldn't have a better tool than AI to help you dig into that quickly. Identify patterns quickly, identify concerns, and even then ideate on those, right?
For sure. Tell me a little bit, as one of the actual writers, tell me a little bit about then versus now with, I found a topic, you know, I've used all my new diversified sources to come up with ideas. I'm ready to create this piece that I know needs to be more in-depth, more authoritative with first party, blah, 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 right?
Right.
What's the then versus now of I'm sitting down to create this piece?
One thing that looks different today for me is my SME interview, because when it comes to the technical stuff, you just can't do an awesome technical piece without a technical expert. So we always want to interview subject matter experts when we can. And I've said it before, there's little I love more than conversations with the engineers behind the solutions that we get to learn from. So that's super fun. But that interview looks different for me now. I'm able to prep better using AI tools. I'm able to sort of, you know, ask first level questions to an AI tool and then develop a really good discussion guide. And then I have an interview with a subject matter expert, which of course we do digitally now, and we record that. And amazing things can happen there because we record it, we use transcripts, we can use all kinds of tools again to make sure we're not missing things, to be able to pay closer attention, to ask better follow-up questions because I'm there in that conversation. I'm not, you know, typing notes furiously and trying to keep up. So that is already, it's a better conversation for me right now than it was 2 years ago. So that's exciting for me. And from there, it's a question of there we start thinking about, right, what is the format? What does it need to be? Does it need to be something that is, let's just say a slideshow or something like that? Or should it be a video? Or, you know, what does it need to look like? And from there, we have to think then about that whole list of peripherals, as you called them, and think about how we're going to make those things. Now that looks different from how it looked before as well. You know, if it were 2 years ago and I knew I had to, let's say develop a video script for something that's very technical. And then I needed to make about 12 other things that all kind of fall under micro content. I would feel overwhelmed and it would take me a very, very long time. And I would probably develop some creative fatigue through the process. But again, now using AI tools for repurposing, we're able to get there quicker. We're able to make the tweaks for the different platforms more effectively if we're good at using AI, right? If we are strong users of those AI tools that we have.
Yeah, I mean, the use of AI to make the types of things that are required today feasible is incredible. And I think the other underpinning to all of this is that you just talked through a process in great detail under the assumption that that's always how it is. And that's what I want to point out. It didn't always used to be. We didn't always used to even do an interview for certain content. We used to just, okay, think about it this way. If I'm a writer and I create a piece of content and the only input I'm using, the only raw material I'm using to come up with what goes in that is stuff I researched on the internet.
Then you're no better than ChatGPT.
Then what are you doing here? Like, that's exactly the type of content that AI is going to cannibalize. So that lends us to say nearly definitively that you should not create another piece of content. The core piece, that the peripherals are a little different story, the micro content, but the core piece of content you should never create again unless it has either direct first party experience and quotes baked in or first party research data or both, because it's not going to be successful without one of those two things.
Right. Because it goes back to that idea of, you hear it everywhere, information gain, right? We want to be adding. We want to be additive to what exists already in the world. That's what engineering's all about, right? It's about taking what exists and building on it. That's what we're trying to do as well. We're trying to create content that's going to deliver unique value to its users. And that's going to take a little bit of a unique effort.
Which, it doesn't sound like new advice at all, but we got away with doing it in other ways that were less thorough and were less unique because we were getting benefit out of that. And why wouldn't you take the shortest road to the means to your end, right? But we just can't do that anymore because it's not going to get you what you need.
Right. The sophistication of the systems is increasing, and that means we have to increase our sophistication a little bit if we're going to succeed.
Yeah, and the last bit that I think I want to leave everybody with is that this is great advice as to what you need to do differently and how you can approach content strategy in 2025 for that content to be beneficial to your business. But the other important thing that everyone needs to start laying the groundwork for is how you prove that that is beneficial to your business. Because the nice thing about the old way was that there was much more direct attribution data available to measure it. We referenced this in the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
You used to be able to extrapolate. If I got X amount of visits, I'd get X amount of engagements, I'd get X amount of conversions, yada, 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 down the line. That's not how this different thought leadership type of content works, especially when you think about the vastly more varied distribution platforms that you're putting this on. The things we value and the measures of success of what we're actually intending to happen when we create this type of content is different now. It's less of a direct line. A lot of this content creation is more about that very top of funnel brand awareness. It's more about measuring metrics like engagement, like how many people commented on LinkedIn on this post you published, or how robust is the conversation ongoing that we're participating in on Reddit, or whatever those things are. And it might not necessarily, you might never be able to draw a direct attribution line to a single sale to say, this person who became my customer participated in that conversation on Reddit. You might never know that. And that's very uncomfortable, especially for the stakeholders that you're accountable to outside of marketing, who are not as into these changing landscapes and the kinds of conversations we're having right now. So that would be my other advice going into 2025. As you shift this content strategy, start thinking now about changing that paradigm in the minds of your stakeholders about why we're doing this, what we're expecting out of it, and how we're going to measure it, because that's changing too.
Yeah. I would say too, though, so before we let folks go, we do need to give them a few marching orders, right? Like, where to start now.
I'm talking stakeholder groundwork, like, start educating them on what you're going to change, why you're going to change it, how you're going to measure it, what they're going to care about. I would start that because it might be a long journey. But tactically, as far as your execution of now, what does my content strategy look like and what am I doing and what does that look like? I'd start with a content audit. Like, not everything you've ever done in your entire marketing life is trash. Like, you're going to be able to use that, build on that, repurpose that. Number one, evaluate for just outdatedness, which you should be doing anyway. Like, get rid of stuff that is no longer relevant, it's old, whatever. Also, keep a particular eye on your audit on what is not AI proof, like the types of things we were talking earlier. If this was written with just research on the internet and there's no first person perspective added into it at all, you either need to ditch that or go back in and add stuff. Because if it's something that AI could spit out on its own, then there's no point. So
you're saying, for example, all of those old what is and how to kind of approach items?
All the stuff that used to be really effective at bringing you large volumes of organic traffic because it was informational queries with high traffic volume. Spoiler, none of that traffic was ever converting and bringing you business revenue anyway.
What?
I know. Yeah. I can't see that. But that stuff needs to be either ditched or improved to show that EEAT first party authority expertise experience. And, the organic keyword ranking bit of it all isn't dead. Like, if you were to take a straight up informational query that you wrote about and ranked for in the past, and it was all just factual data that was researched and compiled nicely, and it was really comprehensive and nice, and it was the best current compilation of the answer to that question on the internet, and therefore you ranked for it and got that traffic, that doesn't mean you can't still potentially rank for that and get some of that traffic, but you're going to need that layer of uniqueness and expertise to even rank. So it's not just about pivoting away from Google. It's also part of how you win with Google going forward.
Right, right. Okay, so you audit your content. Great.
Audit your content.
What do you do next?
The next thing then is coming up with your new operating system.
Right.
What are your processes on a regular basis to be listening so that you can ideate on things that are more timely, more close to coming out of your audience mouth rather than relying on, keyword data to do that dictation. So figure out what those processes are. Who's going to pay attention to what's being talked about on LinkedIn? Who is going to automate our capture of sales calls? Like, are they being recorded now? Yes or no? If they're not, get them recorded. If they're being recorded, or once you've got them recorded, what system are you using to gather those and document them and organize them? And then how are you using AI to pull information out of there? Figure out what your queries are. Like, these are things that you can operationalize on a regular basis. So the next step, as you're figuring out how am I going to create new content that's better suited for success in 2025 and beyond, is figuring out those operational processes that will allow you to gather the more diversified ideation source data that we're going to use to pick up what we write going forward. And you're really going to need to work on your team of SMEs. I think that's been one of the biggest challenges as we enact this with our clients, is getting those SMEs comfortable, varying the role they play, whether, some people want to be on camera, some don't. Some want their name on the byline, some don't. Like, figuring out what your roster of participants looks like from a thought leadership standpoint inside your company, and getting them ready to be a part of this team sport of marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I think that folds in really well with the whole idea of just pitching the calendar. I mean, right. And having that sort of recursive approach and conversation on a regular basis so that you're paying attention, so that you're being responsive to your end user needs, as opposed to, coming up with ideas and just deciding that they're the most important thing. So I think you can move a little more quickly now, like you were saying, using AI, using all these tools. If you can set up and operationalize that system and have it set to be timed in such a way that you're not biting off more than you can chew at any given time, and you're reacting to a given set of data that is going to give you good information and good ideas. And then you're going to go back and you're going to collect more in the next, whatever, quarter or something like that. So I think that gives you, it gives you more urgency. It gives you more energy in a shorter period of time. So you can sort of concentrate on what you're really trying to get done and do a better job with the content that you create. And I think the other thing that we talked about a little bit was diversifying your formats. And that means experimenting there as well, right? Finding out, what do your target personas actually prefer? Do they want to listen to a podcast, or do they want to watch videos or do on-demand webinars or whatever it is? But you have to try. You have to try the things, find out what your SMEs are particularly good at,
I think our parting advice here to end this podcast today is go forth and make some mistakes.
For sure. Make some mistakes. And I would say, you know, we've been here before. Marketers have been dealing with change since forever. This is just another one. Let's make stuff. Let's make some content.
Make better content.
Thanks for joining us on the Changeover Podcast. Remember to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Wired.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let us know what you'd like to hear about next time by messaging Wired Group on social media. Thanks for listening.